So hi, my name is Raphael Fricks. I'm a computer engineer for the VA National Artificial Intelligence Institute and also with the Maverick Center at Boston VA. We're excited to announce today, this is our second informational session for the AI Tech Sprint number two, the Aspire demonstrator. So to begin with, we'll talk about some of the, I want to first briefly introduce everybody on the call here to the VA National AI Institute, or oftentimes we just refer to it as the NAI, N-A-I-I. We'll talk about the history of the AI Tech Sprint program, which has been an integral part of how the NAI proceeds in its mission. And then I'll pass it over to Tony to talk about Aspire itself, which is an intra-agency collaboration meant to train tomorrow's workforce. And finally, I'll introduce the AI Tech Sprint that we are planning and will be running soon to assist in developing a prototype for the Aspire project. And we'll have time for a summary and then some questions at the end. So to begin with, the VA National AI Institute, or NAI, we begin by asking why do artificial intelligence at the VA? As many of us know, developments in artificial intelligence are heavily based on the availability of data, but also it's helpful to have experts on hand to inform the development of a project or to implement the project into practice, to see these great innovations really make it into practice and have an impact in veterans care. So this is a slide that we always like to share, showing the scale of the VA, which is the largest integrated healthcare provider in the United States. We have more than 9 million patients, making us the largest integrated healthcare system in the United States. And we see these patients from discharge all the way through the rest of their treatment. We also have more than 120,000 healthcare providers that work at the VA. Something like 75% of all nurses and doctors have some level of training that takes place at VA hospitals. We also collect genomic donations, which is a unique resource that has been a VA effort for multiple years under the Million Veterans Project. These are genomic donations that are tied to medical records for unique discoveries that are available through that. We also have collected, as of August 2019, more than 10 billion medical images, which is, to my knowledge, one of the largest repositories of medical images in the world. And we continue to collect 1 billion images per year. So at this point, we're, you know, closing in on 12, 13, maybe 14 billion images. And we also have over 1,200 medical facilities. We cover all of the United States. I like to describe it sort of like the post office, that there's no area that we do not serve to some degree. And in fact, it's our mission to make sure that we cover veterans regardless of their location, which leads us to our last point here, that we have millions of telehealth episodes per year. And this is a figure that has increased 12-fold since the beginning of the pandemic. So the National AI Institute was founded to establish the Department of Veterans Affairs as the preeminent organization for research, development, and training of artificial intelligence with impact on a global scale, ensuring the health and well-being of our veterans. We want to see a lot of these technologies, whether they're innovations for triage or for computer-aided diagnostics or for assisting our telemedicine services, translated into practice when right now there is no coherent plan in some cases in terms of, you know, how do we get these innovations from proof of concept or sort of a research setting into a standard part of our clinical practices so that we can leverage the benefits that are being promised right now through artificial intelligence. We are guided by our executive orders 13859 and 13960, which are respectively maintaining American leadership in artificial intelligence and promoting the use of trustworthy artificial intelligence in the federal government. We also contribute to various national strategies. The National AI R&D Strategy, published in 2019, had a lot of input from our office, as well as our office is responsible for the VA AI strategy and contributions to the joint VA-DoD strategy, that we set a lot of the strategy going forward for how these organizations approach, document, and have oversight into AI applications within treatment of veterans and treatment of active duty soldiers in the case of the DoD. And finally, as of the 2021 National Defense Authorization Act, there has been a shift to a national AI initiative, which coordinates AI research within and policy across the federal government. So this is an intra-agency collaboration that we want to proactively take steps to ensure that artificial intelligence within the U.S. government is well utilized and developed in a trustworthy manner. And I encourage everybody here to learn more about these initiatives at AI.gov. Now, I'm going to briefly cover some trustworthy AI principles. That the core concept is that we want new deployments of artificial intelligence to be lawful and respectful of our nation's values, purposeful and performance-driven, accurate, reliable, and effective, safe, secure, and resilient, understandable, responsible, and traceable, regularly monitored, transparent, and accountable. So all of these concepts together are things that we enforce and reiterate during our tech sprint, that we guide teams that participate to ensure that various bases are covered, that we want to, you know, ensure that if a prototype's developed through the tech sprint, that not only does it have considerations for being a secure implementation of understandable AI, explainable methods, but also that it's something that is welcomed by the practicing community, that it's something that practitioners, for instance, if it's a clinical innovation, understand what is the science behind this development, how does it affect their practices, and where can it be useful, so that, you know, we find that there's much more open-armed uptake of innovations if we include practitioners from the ground up in terms of prototype development and really guiding the early iterations of a prototype as it goes through all these different piloting stages that eventually lead to a clinical innovation. So now that brings us to our AI tech sprints. I wanted to cover what is the basic idea behind an AI tech sprint. An AI tech sprint is a three-month collaboration where the VA works with outside organizations to develop a prototype for instance, clinical care, or in this case, training of our workforce. The idea behind an AI tech sprint is that we found that previously government would put out big sets of data with, you know, no particular input or no chance for feedback. And it was sort of a large one-way communication. Think of like a radio broadcast. We find that it's much more effective to use data as a bi-directional tool for communication, where the government can provide, government institutes, I should say, such as the Department of Veterans Affairs, can provide access to large, unique data sources, such as all of the data we generate during our routine clinical practice. We also provide veteran and expert perspectives, people who are at the forefront of research or are, you know, the recipients of the technology themselves that may see benefit from implementation of these technologies. And we found that in past iterations of the tech sprint, that has been really critical for a lot of teams, getting to hear from some of these experts that oftentimes are inaccessible to outside industry. And finally, we do provide technical expertise and user-based feedback. There's rounds of iteration where National AI Institute computer scientists such as myself provide directed feedback on specific prototypes. And finally, demo and funding opportunities. Now, in return, what tends to happen is that, you know, from industry, we partner with industry and academia and non-governmental organizations to receive new ways of thinking, that we get innovative product ideas through these collaborations, and we get a fresh perspective. We, a lot of times also, industry has much more expertise in terms of developing the technology and then developing it all the way through in a professional manner to a viable minimum product. So we lean on industry, especially, and any of these teams that may be participating today, for trusted AI solution development that can be done collaboratively. And so we get we're looking to establish a mutually beneficial relationship here, that in deployment at the Department of Veterans Affairs, that again, this is one of the largest integrated health systems in the United States, so it's potentially, you know, a very large testing field or really opportunity to use that prototype going forward. So all of this to say that we recently concluded an AI tech sprint. The most recent one was centered on veterans not currently served by the VA. where we received over 60 teams applying from industry, academia, and non-governmental organizations. The majority of those teams were paired with a subject matter expert, typically a clinician focused on their specific application, that met with them at least once, 1 hour per week. 44 teams that were selected to participate in this project, we had about 90% of those teams with seeing at least one subject matter expert for 1 hour per week or more. And we were able to direct teams to access specific data sets, and in some cases even provide data through, for instance, the VA Open Data Portal. And the result of this textprint process, the most recent one, was that we received 32 viable demos, about a half dozen of which, or a dozen actually, I think at this point, have gone on to successfully pilot within the VA through funded opportunities. And so examples of the innovations that have come through the textprint project are, for instance, the Holmes platform, which is a software tool that integrates wearable sensor data for personalizing physical therapy. So the idea is that veterans who are coming in for physical therapy will opt into the system, receive a bunch of wearable sensors, such as pressure pads that are inserted into the shoe, like insoles, as well as maybe a wearable watch, like an Apple Watch or something to that extent. And this will record data about how the veteran is moving when they're outside of the clinic, providing additional information for their practitioner. And ultimately, we hope this will help indicate whether, you know, a person is adjusting well, whether it be a prosthetic or just recovering from an injury or something to that extent, to avoid costly complications like overuse injuries or wear and tear that could be avoided down the line. Now, another example of a project that came through the AI Tech Sprint that was developed through a collaborative interaction with the Department of Veterans Affairs that we're now looking to pilot was a suicide prevention tool that will help with our mission in supporting veterans through the Veterans Crisis Line. So the Veterans Crisis Line is a phone line that is available 24/7 to veterans who can call in. Once they, you know, if they've made a call to the VCL, they're contacted after the fact with a support message from the VSignals team. They can fill out a survey at that point. And what was happening traditionally is that the survey that was filled out in written text form was being sent to a system to triage the messages. And then that triage system would indicate a few specific messages that needed, that warranted human interaction, or I should say a human team to look over. The previous system was producing something like a 90% false positive rate. So our new tool that we're now investigating applies natural language processing to reduce that false positive rate and point our team of experts to the messages that are most alarming faster. So the idea here is that we can get to these veterans in crisis much faster. And finally, we're also looking at triage tools that help our telemedicine services. So one of the services that we provide is dermatology, of course. And so if you have veterans who are in a rural setting that don't necessarily have access to a top dermatology program, one of the ways that they can be treated through the VA is that their local provider can take an image either with a camera or a specialized device like a dermatoscope, and that image can be sent through our teledermatology service. So given the demand that we have for this kind of technology, we were looking to provide either a computer-aided diagnostic program that would take these images and give a recommendation of what type of problem we're looking at here, or in some cases also indicate if the image is high enough quality to be diagnostic, because sometimes a veteran will go into their local office, they'll take a picture, and 2 weeks later they'll have to come back because the picture, the initial picture, was too blurry or out of focus or something, and so they've been asked to come back. In cases where the problem ultimately is like maybe a skin cancer, then we've delayed diagnosis by about 2 weeks. So the intent of this system would be either to provide diagnostic assistance to speed up the reading time for teledermatologists and to avoid these repeat visits where, you know, potentially we could have told them on the spot that maybe the image was not suitable for diagnostic quality. And so now I'll pass it over to Tony, who can tell you all about the Aspire program.
Hello, everybody. My name is Tony. As was indicated, Aspire is a program that I run, and it is for Aspire that we are having this tech sprint. Aspire stands for All Services Personnel and Institutional Readiness Engine. In this case, we are looking for a assessment and upskilling system to focus on research personnel, not necessarily a healthcare system. So a little bit different this time. Amazing. So Aspire at full tilt, that is to say, doing all the things it's supposed to do as well as it's supposed to do them, which will be a system that is beyond the scope of the sprint, nobody panic, will support everything from recruitment to then the assessment of would-be or current employees, to very well articulated gap analysis between the results of that assessment and a persona of what that individual should know based on their role and the organization for which they serve in that role. From that gap analysis, populate a bespoke learning pathway that will be particularized to the individual and be made up of micro lessons so that we're minimizing both the investment in to create, cultivate, and maintain educational content, but also, more importantly, to minimize the amount of time an individual must spend to get up to speed. And then through the process of formulating, and then we'll validate that learning at the end with another assessment, as opposed to just promising that they learned or having substandard post-education evaluations. We'll have actual semi-rigorous assessment to validate that learning occurred. In having this some reasonable standardization of what you learn, how you learn it, and the validation that you did learn it, one of the ideas is that we will be able to much more easily support career development and transitions for individuals for their own benefit, but also for the functional benefit of agencies, the ability to more readily see where personnel might be in the ecosystem should an emergency need arise, that you can help more quickly patch it. It also will help individuals transfer from one agency to another or from one line of service to another, which is particularly interesting for us, the VA, as we have so many people coming out of .mil, you know, out of the various branches of the military to serve in the VA, but also for the government at large, as we consistently want to recruit from and don't do terribly well recruiting from universities, so that .edu to .gov transition. To narrow down a little more specifically to where we are right now. So right now we are in, oopsie daisy. Right now we are in research and design. This is the stage where we are. This tech sprint is in a sense part of a research exercise, but it is of course obviously a design exercise very transparently. We're trying to figure out, to bleed in the second box here, we're first and foremost trying to figure out a very good common data model, which is to say a language through which information and tagging and metadata will be stored and understood by all of the participating systems in Aspire. The development of a common data model will be absolutely necessary to better interoperability and full function of the system down the road. And some simplified version of a common data model will be part of the exercise in this tech sprint, as you'll need to make one for an assessment and a learning system to communicate with each other anyway. You might not use the term common data model. There's been some pushback. There might be better terms. So just know when we say that, we do mean that standardization of tagging and tracking and metadata to make sure that systems that are interacting with data and personas speak about them consistently amongst themselves. Once we have a common data, and then an SBOM, sorry, is a software bill of materials. That's a security requirement. The sprint and the results of the sprint will not be subject to SBOM requirements. This is just something that is for Aspire itself down the road. But if you have questions about SBOMs in general, I'm happy to talk about them. And then the outcome first and foremost that we need for ourselves, for Aspire, and then the critical part of this sprint is going to be the assessment. I am under obligation to have my first deliverable back out of this major project be a functional, interactable assessment that can accurately and effectively assess, in my case, 100 people from the VA, in the sprint case, a smaller number of people from more places, but to, in a computer adaptive way, accurately assess individuals' AI knowledge in this particular case. That may or may not be the case with the sprint. That is the intent. We can talk about that as things get refined. But anyway, the idea is to have an assessment that, again, is secure and on this common data model so that it can begin to communicate with the other systems that will be part of Aspire. This competency management system is, let us say, the set in series of master menus of competencies and the diagram of networking amongst and within competencies, so that we understand how different pieces of knowledge participate in greater wholes of knowledge, and how pieces of one piece might interact with the piece of another to again try to streamline and make most efficient and maximize the learning that we can give and the value we can give back to personnel and agencies at a minimal time investment for any given person to commit any given activity. So we want to make sure that people get credit for what they know. We want to make sure that if one lesson can more efficiently streamline to another, that it's done the best way possible. And then, of course, we need to deliver those lessons in some way. This is the other end cap of the tech sprint extent of Aspire, although the full system does go beyond this. And that is a learning system that will actually give that content. So if I've done the assessment, and the assessment, say I've done the assessment about logical and mathematical thinking because I want to be a data scientist, and it's figured out that I'm pretty darn good at logic and pretty darn good at math, but I'm really bad at how to manage exponents, let's say, really bad at dividing, multiplying, remembering which rule is which. And then the assessment has determined that, and my job code says that I need to have a high enough level of math and reasoning aptitude, and I'm falling short of that in part or in whole because of my inability to deal with exponents, then I need something to teach me about that. And more importantly, or not more importantly, but also important, is that I need something to teach me just that. Part of the goal, again, of Aspire is to make sure that it's just in time and just enough in its learning. We don't want to fall victim to old trends of sending people into expensive and time-intensive long-form trainings for when they generally only need very small parts of it. And then again, that is the end cap for the tech of the sprint version. The sprint version starts with an assessment and ends with a little bit of educational content. In full service, Aspire will go beyond to serve personnel management functions, of course, as you get a picture of what people know and what teams do and do not know. You get a better sense of how people might be able to be moved around, or how you might incentivize career transitions, how you might prioritize training, prioritize hiring. And then even further afield, if I could, I did. And well past the view of the sprint, but just so you get a better sense of where Aspire is going long term. I mentioned that we're going to serve a recruiting function. That's true. And we'd like to reevaluate recruiting and move it away from being a marketing exercise and getting it into being like a socio-anthropological exercise. Like culture mapping that we already do for academic and defense purposes. Let's use them for recruitment purposes. We talked about how there's going to be standardization as a hope as part of the outcrop of Aspire. Once that standardization and validation gets to a certain level of rigor, it would seem appropriate that maybe we can formalize certain certifications, and certain services are interested then in tying those certifications to incentivization. The intelligence community in particular tends to tie incentivization to learning things, even if they're not one-to-one required for your job, like learning a new language or learning a new programming language, natural language, or learning a new programming language. You could treat Aspire certifications the same way. And then there is a de facto national security function. We will know some sense of what people know. We'll have some sense of if persons who know certain things disappear off the map, we'll know what they knew, when they went wherever. Again, well past the concerns of the sprint, but something that Aspire may come around to doing long term. So this is the sprint that we've been talking about, and I think that now I pass it back to Raphael. Yes.
Sure. Yeah, I can return to now. So now we have a basic idea of what Aspire is. It's a workforce management program whereby we can assess who we have, what they need, and you know what the future needs might be of a department like the Department of Veterans Affairs. And so now we're announcing a tech sprint to produce one of the base components of the Aspire program, which can go on to then be used by multiple agencies through this overarching program called Aspire that Tony has described. So I'm actually going to start by jumping ahead to the summary here just to go over some of the key information. Our tech sprint this year will be collecting applications until August 1st to participate. We'll notify teams by August 5th, and the sprint itself will be conducted over a 90-day span from August 8th until November 7th. We'll go through what exactly teams will encounter during the sprint, what different phases will be dedicated to. And I want to first begin by offering this contact information here, that you can find information about our sprint through challenge.gov, through the NAI website at research.va.gov/NAII, And we have also a subpage on TextSprints, but the core idea is that the VA is inviting teams to work with us to develop the initial demonstrator for the Aspire training platform. And so now let's go into the details of how that fits into our overall TextSprint plan and what will be conducted during this sprint. So first of all, like I mentioned, we've been doing these roughly annually. We look to offer many more over the years. And so this will join sort of a long history of TextSprints that have been conducted by the NAI, by the VA, that have led to various different piloting opportunities in the past. We had our first TextSprint on creating the health, the future of healthcare, which actually started, was concluded as the NAI was formed. So that's why we call it TextSprint number zero. That TextSprint led to two pilots that are currently within the VA, a clinical trial selection tool, which is a piece of software to point veterans to clinical trials that may be relevant to their conditions, as well as a telemedicine tool that makes sure that patients are adhering to their prescribed medication. Now, the other TextSprint that followed about a year later was the veterans not currently served by the VA, TextSprint number one, which led to those prototypes you heard about earlier. So we hope to continue that tradition now with TextSprint number two, which is the Aspire demonstrator to create this talent management platform, at least the initial parts of it, with a lot of feedback and iteration that can then go on to be used by the Aspire program to be developed further or to, you know, become part of a larger tool. And we do also plan on offering additional TextSprints, but we have, you know, nothing specific to announce about that today. We're focused on one at a time. So the idea behind TextSprint number two, the Aspire sprint that you're here to learn about today, is that we want a platform to assess individuals. So a person takes this test through the Aspire platform that will be developed during the the sprint. The Aspire platform then comes up with some sort of encoding or some method of representing that person's expertise, which we do not prescribe, but is generally speaking something that will then be used to personalize that person's future education and understand where the strengths and weaknesses are of that individual in specific technical fields. So our intent is that in the first phase of development of these prototypes, we will work with teams to build a platform that can administer tests, make some sort of representation of that person's expertise, and output a training pathway with some level of insight into how these decisions were made under the hood. So we want a trustworthy solution here that has some level of explainability, and we'll work with teams to iterate through their prototypes to make this happen by the first milestone, which is planned for about 6 weeks after the sprint starts. Then, at the end of this six-week period, once the first milestone is produced, the prototypes will be scored by NAI staff to ensure that we have an accurate computerized adaptive assessment able to really explore what that individual's strengths and weaknesses are, that it also can feed into a learning management system where we understand where those competencies are and how that person might then expand their abilities. And we want to see, you know, we'll give general feedback in terms of quality of the user interface and software stability. Several groups within the Department of Veterans Affairs have been dedicated to cybersecurity testing or to ensuring that we have a coherent sort of design language and stability expectations of software products. So we will give assistance in terms of or feedback in terms of how prototypes are progressing. And finally, we look at the overall organization of the project. If it's been something that's been prototyped according to principles that we can assist with, or, you know, if there have been sort of a steady back and forth between teams that is very productive. And by the end of the first phase in September 19th, roughly about a week later, I believe, we'll give feedback and select down to six finalists or teams that will proceed on to the second phase. Now, in the second phase, given that we have a prototype learning platform, we will then dedicate efforts to providing beta testers for any learning platform that has made it to the second phase. The idea is that we have roughly, I believe, 20 people signed up as beta testers who will use the platforms produced by the teams to take 1 hour assessments to assess their ability in artificial intelligence. So these would be, you know, general learning concepts and understanding of how to apply AI in their day-to-day practice. We will know in advance the expertise level, broadly speaking, very coarse level expertise of these individuals, whether they're a complete novice or they have some intermediary level skills, like they're a student perhaps in the field, or if they're an expert, perhaps they're the professor. Based on that, the systems participating will give a score to those individuals zero to one, based on how high their expertise is. We will then add a quantitative component to the evaluation where the more individuals who are correctly classified in the second phase, the higher the prototype will score. So that by the end of the sprint, prototypes will be scored based on not only the impressions of a panel of senior VA and intra-agency experts who will give feedback to the projects and evaluate it on those four metrics that we talked about at the end of phase one, but we'll also have a quantitative component to it, which is how well does the software classify the beta testers that will be applied to the software during phase two. And based on the top standings of this, all of the six finalists will be awarded some portion of a total of $150,000 in prizes that will be distributed through this event. So the key dates, once again, are that the applications are due by August 1st for consideration into this challenge. Teams will be selected by August 5th and notified. The sprint kickoff itself will be Monday, August 8th. And the sprint will run until November 7th, or for finalists will run from August 8th until November 7th. And the rest of the teams will be invited to participate in later phases if they would like to observe and see what's going on. But at that point, we're dedicating beta testing to the finalists. And finally, we'll also have a public demo day, which has not been set in stone yet, but will be roughly a week after the sprint conclusion, which will be an opportunity to share the results of this sprint to a wider audience, to a public audience, and also to hand out those awards as well. So in summary, we have the AI Tech Sprint number 2, Aspire, where the VA invites interested teams to apply for our latest AI Tech Sprint and build a demonstrator platform for the cross-agency Aspire employee education program. Prizes totaling $150,000 will be awarded to the top six teams, which are finalists that will be selected after the first milestone. Applications are due August 1st. The application process is on challenge.gov. Teams will be notified that they have been selected by August 5th, and the sprint itself will be run over a 90-day period starting on August 8th. So I believe that concludes our material here. And if there's any questions now, we turn it over to the attendees.
And right now the Q&A screen is looking empty for the audience. We have plenty of time for questions right now. Please take this opportunity to send those in.
So I guess I can cover some more mechanics about how this tech sprint usually unfolds is that throughout the 9-month period, we have regularly scheduled check-ins that are basically meetings, sort of all team meetings where the members from the NAI run these meetings to provide updates or hear feedback from teams participating. We also usually try to schedule some sort of useful presentation that is in line with what we're working on during the sprint. So in this case, it would be presentations from the various educators at these different agencies that we're working with, as well as informational sessions from, for instance, the GSA about what is the process for vendors to work with the federal government. That a lot of times, you know, we have very complicated rules to be a vendor for federal agencies, and we like to help teams navigate that so that we can work with you after the sprint is over. And then we'll have those weekly meetings throughout the process. By the end of the project, towards the end of the sprint, I should say, those weekly meetings will be more an opportunity to help troubleshoot any kind of issues that we might have, or to work with teams to get, like, for instance, beta testers scheduled. And we look to make sure that this is valuable time for the participants, that we provide some expertise or make some introductions for potential collaborators, or, you know, in the case of this sprint in particular, this beta testing data should be useful feedback, we hope, for the teams that are looking to produce education platforms or even just develop a software interface like this.
Thank you. We have gotten a couple questions and wondering what the evaluation process is or the evaluation criteria.
Yeah. So first of all, I just see an easy question here. So for the total six teams now, the higher placing you are, the more you'll receive. I think the exact breakdown is on the challenge.gov site. But so, yeah, I guess the average would be 25K, but I think it's like 50 or 55K for the top placement. And then I think the lowest placement would be 5K, something to that extent. I think it's spelled out on the challenge.gov site. Beta testers, April Williams, I recognize the name. We may reach back out to you then if needed. And I'm sorry, what was the original question? I got distracted here.
No worries. If you look at the top of the questions list, we've gotten a couple questions and wondering how you evaluate the applications, insights in the evaluation criteria, that sort of thing.
Right. Yes. So that's a very important question. And I forgot to mention, so the evaluation criteria are a written document that will be shared with teams at the beginning of the sprint. And so we allow roughly a 2-week period for teams to give us feedback about the evaluation criteria to see that it's something that we all agree on in terms of how the prototype should be evaluated. And as I indicated, at the end of the first phase, we have a demo essentially that's produced for the first milestone that will be evaluated by 9 panelists. And so we'll give you direct feedback about the how the demo and the current prototype fit with the scoring criteria that we've all agreed on. So that's essentially a qualitative evaluation that you'll be making a presentation showing us the software. We'll have a chance to sort of test the software ourselves as well, that will be arranged during the sprint. And we'll make essentially a panel judgment that the people evaluating these milestones will give a score to your demonstration, and the teams that receive the highest average score from panelists will proceed on to be finalists. Now, for the finalist evaluation will be similar, except for the panel will be larger and will be more senior stakeholders in this project as well. I believe Tony has a full list of panelists, but we like to keep that sort of close until we're closer to when the panel will be evaluating the prototypes too. And so that will be the majority of the score then at the end, is that the majority of the score will come from the qualitative evaluation the panelists will have of your demonstration. Now, there will be that quantitative component that comes from beta testing, where beta testers will essentially, the system's ability to accurately classify beta testers will factor into the overall score. Something like 1/3 of the score will be like a score that you get from accurately classifying beta testers, and then 2/3 will be part of the panel evaluation, where you have a chance to present to the panel and give sort of a live demonstration, and we will base the scoring off that as well.
Great, thank you. Another question that we've received in here: to enter the sprint, does my team need to be able to build the entire stack, or could a team be focused on one aspect, such as an innovative software platform for training?
I think, you know, for the purposes of this prototype now, we will try to assist in terms of making the software as usable as possible. But that's why we've sort of built in 90 days for this evaluation, is that we want to work with teams to try to make the, to you know, be able to actually access your prototype, to send our testers to it, to make sure everything's working and in place. So it may be helpful, you know, if you're just focused on one aspect of it, we might be able to provide feedback in terms of getting this thing usable and ensuring that we can use it and evaluate it properly. Now, I would also say that you're welcome to partner with other organizations. Now, this is something we don't necessarily broker, but has happened a lot in the past where, you know, maybe one team is just focused on the evaluation and another team is just focused on the user interface. Now, if you're able to make some sort of collaboration like that, you're welcome to apply as sort of a joint team. We just can't do any of the negotiations of, you know, who does what and how would the prize money be distributed after that. We give the prize money to a team. But yes, we are open to working with, you know, very early prototypes. And if you have specific questions, you're welcome to email us and possibly set up a meeting to see if there's anything specific about your organization that we can help address.
Great, thank you. It looks like with the questions that we have received in, they have all been covered here.
I want to hop on and add something that I think we forgot to mention. To emphasize a little bit more of the what's in it for y'all sort of thing. Well, of course there's prize money, and of course there's the chance to work with the VA, and there's always a chance that, although it isn't guaranteed in any way by the tech sprint, that there could be more and better contracting opportunities with the VA down the road. But I think also I want to emphasize that I'm currently in the process of continuing to sell the Aspire system throughout the government. I have not yet convinced every single agency to adapt it. That would be amazing, but we're not there. And part of the problem that I have is that trying to explain Aspire to individuals sometimes goes very poorly. And that's why we want this demonstrator, so that people can actually experience it. And while the point of the demonstrator is to sell Aspire, it is also the fact that during that time, those people will be experiencing your service or software. And these are government leaders and decision makers. Spread throughout all sorts of agencies. So while my I'm not officially offering or promising anything, and certainly my intent here is somewhat selfish, I want a demonstrator for my project. It is worth note that you and your product will, you yourselves will come along, and your product will have a chance to come into these briefings and to be seen and become known by people all over the government, even if you don't ultimately build the real capital A Aspire with us down the road. And even if the prize money itself isn't all that much for you, that opportunity itself, I think, is valuable and kind of hard to get. Generally, you're not going to have a local tour guide, basically, throughout government leadership. So this could be a very once, maybe ever, well, it's an overstatement, but a very rare opportunity. And I encourage you to consider that as part of the value added back to you as well.
Actually, what Tony's talking about, now this is kind of inside baseball, but it's very helpful, I think, to explain. So typically when say you're an industry, when a company wants to enter into a federal contract, now that's usually a process that can take a very extensive challenge-based process where, you know, if government is looking to buy something, they typically make a very well-publicized call for proposals or request for quotations, an RFQ. And it's something that is typically vetted, that there has to be sort of an even distribution, that oftentimes it's difficult to have a sole source justification, is what it's called, when a government agency decides to purchase a product and produces a sole source justification to purchase it from one company directly. So one of the reasons we continue to offer the AI tech sprint, and a real advantage of going through this process as opposed to, you know, just trying to sell individually, is that we have now used the AI tech sprint challenge as a viable justification for sole source provisioning of a purchase. What that means is that by participating in the tech sprint, we're able to use that as the justification of why we want to work with this specific team instead of having to open it up to essentially a new bidding process. As many of you may heard, like for instance, recently NASA was looking to have a service to the International Space Station that was originally committed to one company, then another company sued to get into that bidding process. So by doing the tech sprint, we're offering a competitive venue for teams to come and essentially do that bidding up front, so that once we've selected a team after the fact, if we want to proceed to purchase that demonstrator platform or use it for future uses, we can point to the AI tech sprint process and say that, you know, this team has competed. We did have an opportunity for other teams to try in, and so we've narrowed the field of competitors. But another thing is that even if you participate in the AI tech sprint and work with us through this process, and maybe your team's not selected, maybe it needs the prototypes needs additional work, and we do find that, you know, the commentary and the constructive criticism we try to provide through this process tends to be very helpful and well received. I would say that participating in the AI tech sprint now helps a lot of teams better navigate the federal contracting process that, you know, I wouldn't have known about really what the different steps are if I hadn't been working with teams through the tech sprint. That a lot of times there's different ways that a startup organization can enter GSA scheduling to better understand, like, a certain number of purchases for the VA have to be made from minority service-disabled veteran-owned businesses. And so you may qualify for that and not know that that's really a classification that we look for. So we try to guide teams to understanding really how to work with federal government efficiently. And we find that this is all overall much cheaper and faster than a traditional contracting vehicle, where we have to open it up to this RFI or RFQ process where, you know, we receive many bids. We don't really get to evaluate the product in question. And then we have to make a decision, and we go through this whole process of onboarding the vendor, and really a contract can come several years down the line. So as opposed to this, there is no, the only thing that has to be done to start working with us through the AI tech sprint is for teams to complete an application through challenge.gov. After that, we will select the teams. You're welcome to also reach out to us directly through our emails. Tony, do we have a tech sprint email set up yet? If so, please add it to the chat box here. But reach out to us through challenge.gov or through the NAI website if you have any questions, because the tech sprint is really a unique opportunity that by applying to this process and being selected, you're working with us directly. And from there, we can help iterate on the prototype until it's at a state that we can potentially enter a piloting agreement. So we've been able to get some of these ideas off the ground much faster, and through this process have a lot of non-traditional companies really become government vendors, and it becomes, you know, potentially a very large market, whether it's you're working with all these other agencies that Aspire touches, or if, you know, in my traditional realm, if you're able to pilot at multiple VA medical centers.
Great, thank you. I have not seen any other questions coming in. We could probably wrap things up here unless you two have any other closing remarks. Oh, okay. Tony just said he saw an email.
Tony is finding, we do have AI tech sprint email, va.gov email that we'll be adding, but also feel free to reach out to us directly, or there is the naii@va.gov general purpose email route. And this session will be recorded. And again, for more information, look at challenge.gov. We have a posting on challenge.gov. We also have the NAI's general website at research.va.gov/naii.
I'm just kind of waiting on Tony just a moment to see if he. Finds it. Otherwise, we can start wrapping the session up. Rafael, Tony, I want to thank both of you so much for taking the time to present today. We really do appreciate it. Okay, Tony says to go with NAII@va.gov for now. So if you have an email, that's a good place to submit. For the audience, when I close the meeting out in a moment here, you will be prompted with a feedback form. We would appreciate if you took a few moments to fill that out. Thank you everyone for joining us for today's session, and we look forward to seeing you at a future ORD or HSR&D cyber seminar. Thanks everyone, have a great day.
Thank you all for attending. We look forward to seeing your applications.
Great, thank you.